You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Eileen Murphy. She's talking to me from Brooklyn. Eileen, thanks so much for being with me.
Thank you.
Eileen, let's talk about what's happening in your studio right now. What are you working on?
Well, I'm sitting in my studio at the moment looking at a painting. I'm an oil painter. I have been making almost exclusively landscape paintings for probably around 4 years now. It's a funny moment for me in that I have been all just starting to mess around with still lives. So I feel like I'm almost transitioning a little bit. I'm not really sure what's going to happen, but for the moment, I'm still working on landscape paintings, very traditional landscape paintings.
And so how large? Because your paintings are fairly large, right? How big are these?
They can be. I mean, they're always easel paintings. This one is 24 by 36 that I'm looking at right now. So they range maybe from 30 by 40 down to maybe 16 by 20. I actually did a recent series of 16 by 16.
And what's happening with still lifes?
Oh, my goodness. Well, I keep it's funny, and that's probably a weird thing for me to jump right into, but I've been teaching, and I keep making students do still lives and, like, doing demonstrations for them, and then just wanting to keep continuing the still life rather than going back to my many tiny trees. I was also happened to be in France last week, and I just, once you stand in front of Chardin again, I don't know, I just keep thinking about tiny vessels and pears.
Yeah, that's so interesting, right? I mean, so often you hear, like, students being influenced by their teachers, but in this case, you're being maybe not directly influenced by your students, but just the process of learning still life, right, and talking about it sounds like. And now you're in France looking at them also. It's a whole other world. It is a type of landscape in a way, but it's really another world altogether, right?
Yes, and I think I don't know really what's happening. I don't know what will happen, but I've been thinking, well, maybe everything's just been a little bit too big for me in the recent work, and I have to, you know, focus on smaller and smaller things. I do think still life was also the first painting I fell in love with. If I had to choose a kind of painting to look at for the rest of my life, it would be the Dutch masters for sure. Peter Klaus and William Klaus Peda and all those guys are really, that's what I really love to look at.
So let's talk about that a little bit, because that's interesting. And I feel like, I mean, not that I can spot a trend, but that there has been a kind of a resurgence of interest in, or I feel like I've seen more land, you know, still lifes that are kind of like these Dutch masters. But why were you so attracted to still lifes and still are? Why do you think that was the first painting that you were so attracted to?
I think I'm always a real sucker for virtuosity, and that can manifest itself in all kinds of ways. But those paintings are so inarguably virtuosic. But I also love that when you get close to them, handling, there's no, like, oh, let's make the background fuzzy or photographic. And they were using lenses for sure, but it just, you know, and Vermeer can get some soft edges, of course. But in a lot of, like, the still life paintings and Beauchart and all the flower paintings, like, it's just crisp and crisp and crisp, but you still know that everything is made out of a different material. And there's just such a world, like you say, it is a landscape in and of itself. And I don't know, I always, it really is something that makes me really excited.
Well, they're also, I always see it all as all very symbolic, right? I mean, maybe not, but unlike a landscape, which is, you know, something you're capturing. I mean, you're framing it, but a still life, what you choose to paint and why, seems kind of special in its own, almost like a portrait of the painter.
I think that's true, but I do think it's equally true in landscape. I think, you know, all of those choices are very relevant. And when I'm forced to write statements, which I try not to do, but you do have to do them sometimes, I will usually say about the landscape paintings that they're really, any landscape is a reflection of its viewer. So I'm choosing something, but the one of the great things about landscape is that people bring their own history in the world to it, as they do with every painting. And you can, there's, you can basically see whatever you want because it's so basic in certain ways. And I think still life is the same way. Like, everyone's seen an apple and everyone's seen a jug, but then you go to it and from it, from wherever you are and whatever you've done and seen and whatever you feel.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, earlier you said you're kind of a sucker for virtuosity, which is interesting. In like the contemporary landscape of art, we don't see a lot of that. And in college, doesn't seem to really even be taught. Where did you hone your interest in that? Was it in college or somewhere else?
I was really lucky in that I had I actually had a very good high school art teacher who was really interested in making us draw what we saw, which worked for me because that was what I was interested in. But also in college, I went to a liberal arts college. I went to Mount Holyoke, and I did study studio art, but I do think it's very different to study art at a liberal arts school versus an actual art college. And it's just, I don't know, no one was that doctrinaire. I had wonderful professors there who would always let me do what I was interested in. But I also did make some really terrible stripe paintings in college because I also do love a stripe painting and geometric abstraction. And then I got my MFA at Pratt, and it, you know, I don't know how it is now, but when I was there, it was very friendly to painting, not even specifically traditional painting, but just painting in general, which was not 100% the case, you know, in the mid-aughts. Although I think it was really starting to come back to MFA programs at that point.
Right, and so let's talk about like post Pratt. What happened as you were moving out into the world with those paintings? That's when you were doing landscape? Is that when you were graduating, what you were primarily painting, or was it something else?
No, I was making very bad paintings of food, and I still do love images of food, and of course I love Gibo, and I mean, I think that goes back to the Dutch stuff, too, because they were always representing food. And so that's still something that interests me. Who knows if that will creep in again. But then I really started making paintings of New York because I was pretty new here, and that was how I think I started to understand the landscape. And then I sort of see it, like, connected to what I'm thinking about with still life now, because I was painting hundreds of tiny windows in all of these paintings because they were all cityscapes. And then I sort of shrank it down to one room, and I painted interiors for maybe 5 years, you know, just interiors of single rooms. And then I feel like I moved out the window into the landscape, and that's where the landscape appeared. And now I wonder if I'm just, like, dialing it back again the way I did after the cityscapes. So, I don't know. I don't feel like you don't know what happens as much when you're on top of it, but I'm a little bit suspicious now that that's what's happening.
And how was New York then? When would you first begin to show work? And do you remember the first show? Can we talk a little bit about how that happened? And,
oh, yeah. I'm sure it wasn't that long ago. I don't know. I've been in New York for 15 years. I showed a little bit. I actually have showed more in Hudson, because I got connected to Carrie Haddad Gallery in, I think, 2008 or 2009, and they've been really great to me since then. So those were really my first shows, and I finished my MFA in 2006. And here in New York, I've done some shows with Pani Ramka in Brooklyn and a few other places, and recently I've been working with Garby Simon. And a lot of what I've gotten is just by asking people to see work. I do that all the time. I'm always asking people to see work. And most of the time people say no. And that is just part of it. And I'm pretty good at moving on from that kind of thing. And then I'm pleasantly surprised when someone does want to see anything. But that's really the only way I've ever gotten anything.
And what was the reception like initially? I mean, and it sounds like it was obviously good because you continued to show and make work. But what was the reception like for your work early on, and I guess how has it evolved?
Well, I think early on, I'm very comfortable saying that most of the work was bad. So there wasn't a great reception, but everyone I do think was right about it. It wasn't great. You know, that, like, the cityscapes I thought were pretty decent. I actually really liked the interiors, but they're so specific that I think they were hard for people a little bit. And now it's funny because people always tell me that they like them. And there was a while when I was saying, oh, everyone, no matter what I'm making, everyone likes what I was making 3 years ago. You know, so that happens too. But I'm probably being a little hard on myself, but definitely the very early work after my MFA was not good. But then, you know, you just keep at it. You meet people. You ask people. I do think the landscapes are accessible, and they opened up some things for me. And, yeah, I don't know. I do feel like I've been lucky. It's been a lot. You know what I think the thing I've been most lucky about is that I found a studio the week after I finished my MFA, and I'm sitting in it right now. I haven't had to leave in 15 years. And it's in my neighborhood, and I have always lived really close by. And that's a situation that I think no one has anymore.
Yeah, that is lucky, and that's rare. And you're teaching at the same time? You're still teaching?
I teach lessons out of my studio. I don't teach at any schools currently or anything like that. But it's really fun to work with people one-on-one, and I've gotten to travel a little bit to teach, which has been exciting. I got to go through the Art in the Embassies program with the State Department to Algeria in October and did a bunch of workshops with some Algerian art students and gave some lectures, and that was very, really exciting and fun. So I do really like teaching, and, you know, as I've been saying about the still life thing, it does just make you think about things when you really get down to it, especially with beginners. I actually really like working with beginners.
So tell me a little bit about, I'm interested in two things, working out of your studio and also the Art and Embassies program. But you started your own kind of business and your own income by teaching artists directly from your studio, and are you teaching them, you're teaching them how to paint, is that correct?
That seems to be what's happening, yeah. It's very small still, and it's not even really classes, it's just one person at a time. So I have been doing that. I've also, for years and years, worked for Jeff Koons. So this is sort of something that's sort of evolved while I've been doing that. And the teaching is becoming more and more of a thing, which is very exciting to me. Drawing and painting, just people who really mostly right now it's just people who say they've always wanted to do it and now are starting, and they're really really fun for me.
Yeah, that's great. And has working for Jeff Koons influenced your work or work style at all? And is that current? Because I know he's changed the studio practice a bit. You're still working for him?
I actually am, yeah. Yeah, there's no way it hasn't influenced me because I've been doing it for so long. I've been there for, I think, 8.5 years. So there's no way that it hasn't crept in. But I will say that what I paint there now, but for years I mixed color for the paintings. And that is, I mean, I've gotten to use, like, every kind of paint that you can imagine and every color. And now that was a real, actually, fun education and an expansion of what I knew about just the material of oil paint. So that is something that is great, and it has been really, really useful. But I'm sure, I don't know if it's influenced, I actually think at a certain point there, it maybe loosened me up a little bit because you can only make so many tiny marks. I don't know. That's the kind of thing I'm not sure that I'll ever know exactly because I have nothing to compare it to. I don't know what I'd be doing otherwise.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, just, you know, I worked in the studios of a lot of major artists, and to me, it always seems like a work ethic that's kind of influential. I don't know just what his is, but I imagine it's strong, and to see a kind of functioning studio with, you know, I imagine several assistants there. Also, also I would think gives you a picture of what it could be like to be a full-time artist and have a practice like that.
Yeah, I think that's true, and I also think that part of it is just sort of collegial, because I have met a lot of people there who have similar interests to mine, and we're into the same things, and you end up spending a lot of time together there, and so there is sort of a community around it too, which has been really influential to me. It's kind of a big network of people who have done that, and that's sort of a fun thing to be connected to also. But yes, I'm sure that the act of showing up all the time, which he does, is something that has seeped into me. I like to think I had that already, to be honest. I'm a pretty good... I would say that the thing I'm best at is showing up to my studio.
And tell me about the Art in Embassies program, because that seems pretty special, and working in Algiers sounds amazing. The Art in Embassies program is a type of exchange program. Can you tell me a little bit about that and how that evolved and what that was?
It was so exciting and so unexpected and accidental, and that actually happened through Carrie Haddad Gallery in Hudson. The ambassador, the current U.S. ambassador to Algeria, John Desrochers, is a fan of landscape painting. And actually, he and his wife, they live in it's a building from like the 1830s that is modeled to look like a sort of Ottoman building. It's a really incredible, incredible building. But they were just thinking it actually reminded me of Olana, you know, this kind of like Ottoman building with landscape paintings in it. And that's sort of what they were thinking about when they were choosing the art for the ambassador's residence. So they ended up deciding that they want the landscape paintings. So they got in touch with the gallery where I had some work, and they chose one of my paintings. And then I don't know why, because they chose work from a lot of, like maybe 10 people. And for some reason, they asked me, do you want to come and do some events? We're going to have a show of this work. Do you want to come and do some events around it? And I said, I absolutely do. And it took about a year for everything to come together. And then it was a week of events, and I got to meet all sorts of people. That's actually how I got connected to Anne Murray, who put me in touch with you, because she's in Barcelona,
right,
and I met her in Algiers.
And so a week of events, it was a week of events in Algiers, right?
Yes, yeah. So that was in Algiers. And I'd never been to that part of the world before. I'd been to the Middle East, but not to anywhere in Africa, and nowhere, definitely nowhere in North Africa. So that was, it was also so exciting just to be able to go there and see that our students really are kind of the same everywhere. Like, that was very reassuring. I mean, there were so many wonderful things about it, and everyone was so welcoming, and it was... And basically, I just made landscape paintings for 8 hours a day with this group of art students there, and they were so generous with their interest and enthusiasm. It was really a moving experience.
Well, that's powerful. And can you tell me a little bit more about the Art in Embassies program? I'm a little familiar with it, but that's a program that purchases work directly from artists, but you can also apply to the Art in Embassies program. Is that correct?
I know you can upload your own work and they can browse it and decide, you know, to use it. I think a lot of people do that. As far as the specific programs, I think it can be all different things, because I know in Algeria, basically they wanted to do it and they got a grant for it. And it was really up to the ambassador and his wife. It was something that they wanted to do. But I think that there are other ways that those sorts of programs come about, but they're also like very big, there are massive artworks in some of the American embassies that are, you know, gotten from very big names. So it's a very big range of programming, and I think a lot of it happens in a lot of different ways. And I'm sure that is not a very good explanation.
And so what's next for you? You're working on these paintings, different things, and still working out of your studio and working as a studio in a large major studio. What's happening next? Are you preparing for a show, or will you travel?
I hope to do all of those things. I actually don't think I have any shows that I know about through the end of the summer. Yes, I think that's true. I am doing my first multi-day plein air workshop in October in the Hudson Valley, which I'm very excited about, through an organization called the Artist Workshop Association. So that is something that I'm really looking forward to. But mostly I'm just trying to kind of figure out what's happening in my studio right now and spending time here and seeing where the paintings are going, because I'm not entirely sure about that right now. I mean, I work every day, but it's funny because I feel like the ground is shifting a little bit, and that's what I'm really kind of focused on right now.
Well, that sounds like an exciting point to be in, right? That's what everyone's always reaching for, I think, isn't it?
Yeah, you don't want to be comfortable. You definitely don't. So, I mean, it's really good. And I don't want to be able to, like, bang out these trees too easily, if you know what I mean. Like, it should be hard. So I don't want it to not be hard.
Yeah, good to be a little lost and unsure in some ways. So let me ask you one more question. The last question, I'm always curious what everyone's reading. What are you reading or looking at now?
I have a higher brow and a lower brow answer to that, I think. I just finished The Witch Elm by Tana French. I'm very big on just narrative fiction, literary fiction, really. And so I would recommend that to anyone. I found it quite disturbing, and she does so many things that with her stories that just kind of stick with you. The images stick with you, and the feelings stick with you. But also, something I really enjoyed recently is I also love a good detective novel. So I read all of Louise Penny's Inspector Gamache series, which takes place in Quebec, and I would also recommend them to anyone because they are a delight, I feel like. So if anyone is into that kind of genre, that's my recommendation.
Eileen, thank you so much for talking with me today. I really appreciate your time and your work.
Thank you so much.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.